Hello and welcome to the Home Assistant Podcast. This is episode 2024.2. As usual, I'm joined with Phil. Hey, Phil.
Hey, Rohan. How's it going?
Good. This episode's been sponsored by Home Assistant Cloud by Nabucasa. Easily access your local Home Assistant instant remotely for a small monthly fee that supports the Home Assistant and ESP Home projects. Configuration is done by the user interface, so there's no fiddling with router settings or SSL settings or any YAML.
Hey, Rohan.
All right. Yeah.
I think it's the first time we're going to play this. It's going to play this song, and it's only February. So let's just do the tune.
All right, let's do it.
Cloud strikes again. Here we go.
You're going to love it.
Okay, so as of 2024.2, Home Assistant have removed the Life 360 integration from Home Assistant. They're actually going out and actively blocking all third-party access to their APIs, to their data. So Life 360.
This is an old one, right? They started doing this a while ago, whatever, and Home Assistant called that they're going to be deprecating it and so on and so forth. But now it's actually fully removed from Home Assistant, right? So,
if you don't know what Life 360 is, it's an app that you can install on your phone, basically for just GPS tracking. It's compatible with Android, iOS, the idea being that you get your whole family to use Life 360 so you can track where your kids are, where your mum and dad are, you know, aunts and uncles, have them all on Life 360 and everyone can see where they are on a map, which is similar to what Home Assistant can do with its device trackers and its map. And of course, bringing that data into Home Assistant, you could then use Life 360 as a device tracker to say if you're home or away or if you're in a certain zone. The replacement for Life 360 is obviously the Home Assistant companion app with a Nabucasa subscription or your own remote access using the Home Assistant app. Pretty sad to see something like that go, but at least there is a direct replacement if you can convince all your family to install the Home Assistant app on your phone.
Yeah. So, and again, it's Life 360 kind of did the same thing that Chamberlain did with MyQ not that long ago, where they basically started blocking API calls and stuff from stuff that they don't want. So third party access there. But the other one is Haier, right? Or Haier. I'm not sure how to properly pronounce it, but the European brand that sells products under, you know, General Electric, Hotpoint, Hoover, Fisher-Paykel, and Candy. Here's an example of what not to do, right? We're definitely not the first to report on this. If you follow any other Home Assistant channels, like creator channels, most people have covered it. A lot of folks have covered it, at least. Twitter blew up about it. There was articles on The Verge. There was articles on like a bunch of random like news outlets like that, where they actually served a cease and desist to Andre0512, which is he created the GitHub repo for the integration for Haier's on platform or whatever it's called, or HON integration there. So that's a custom component for Home Assistant to work with their products. So they basically were like, hey, you know, this is it's affecting our business, and you're it's very detrimental to us, so on and so forth. Andre posted that cease and desist and said, hey, you know, sorry, unfortunately, I can no longer maintain this, and this is why, kind of thing. Like I said, media picked that up, right? So it's tons of folks commented on it and whatever. And pretty much immediately, it's like, I think before this, there was like, I don't know, like not that many forks of the code or anything like that. And then pretty much the second this happened, it's like it blew up. There's like 2,000 forks of that GitHub repo and so on and so forth. A lot of responses on social media platforms. Just saying, you know, this is really stupid, right? Which it is. And it's like, you know, and it's funny because even within their corporation, within the same company, their US arm was like, hey, we don't know what you guys are talking about. We are allowing everything. This is just a Europe thing. We don't talk to them. They don't talk to us.
Yes.
Like, it's so some other I don't know, I guess managing director or CEO or whoever of their US arm was like, ooh, we don't want a part of this.
Yeah,
what not executed yeah, well at all. That.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, it's, I don't know, it's a great example of what not to do, right? Or how not to deal with this. And I think they've since backed off and said, hey, you know, it's okay. Like we, you know, you can keep developing it. We'll work with a strategy. And I think the developer, Andre0512, has been in contact with them. And like the CEO reached out, right? And it's like, oh, do CEOs kind of always reach out to your,
yeah,
to your cease and desist folks, right? And they're like, oh, you know, it was a sorry, it was a standard thing. And, you know, we didn't actually mean that. And it's like, I don't know. When you send a legal law document like that, you usually mean it, right?
Nobody's paying expensive people to do that for you. Yeah, right?
Nobody's sending a notice to somebody being like, hey, we're going to essentially not just shut you down, but go after you personally for this. No, nobody's going to like, again, I don't want to call it a threat, but it is effective. It's a legal type of a threat, right? So it's... I don't know. It's really bad. So there's a lot of folks that are starting to boycott the brand and saying, hey, you know, this is just, we don't want to start using, we don't want to buy any more of your products, and so on and so forth, right? So it's, and a lot of people have been like, hey, we only bought your product because of the integration with that, right? So the argument there is you're saying that it's hurting your business, but, you know, that actually doesn't make sense because of how many people are going in and buying it, right? So understanding that, you know, especially when you run APIs and stuff like that are cloud-based, there's fees you have to pay and so on and so forth, right? I don't know how they host it or where they host it or anything like that. But when you talk about like, hey, you know, we, for example, hey, we run it on AWS. Okay, cool. You have to pay AWS for those fees, right? To obviously use that service to operate your API gateways and so on and so forth. But again, that's a costing exercise, right? So you should be costing your products accordingly to, you know, to handle those API calls and so on and so forth, right? And let's face it, of everybody that buys these kind of products, it's only a smaller subset, arguably too, that are doing home automation and stuff like that, right? And listen, home automation is definitely more of a luxury kind of a hobby, right? Like, again, it's not cheap, right? You can totally do things on the cheap and stuff like that, but when you're buying products specifically to say, hey, I want to buy this because of its integration, and you're not sitting there with your soldering iron and a PCB that you designed to say, okay, this is how I'm going to build this on the cheap, it is more of a luxury kind of thing, right? So with people buying these kind of products, it's like, okay, you have a specific market, right? And I know they are very popular in terms of the AC brands they have and stuff like that, but I don't know. It's very distasteful, right, to the open source community and so on and so forth. So it's left a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths for this. Yeah, so absolutely. It's just frustrating. Again, we've I think expressed our opinion several times about how we feel about organizations doing stuff like this, right? Whether it's Chamberlain and I use MyQ personally, right? And you know, it is frustrating. I've fully removed it from my home assistant instance, and I'm looking at a couple of the alternatives, right? RatGTO and so on and so forth. But you know, it's that one. We've had obviously now Hire, we've had Logitech with the Harmony remotes for, we've had a bunch of these, right? And it's some were handled a little better than others. For the most part, they were, I don't know, I'd say this is one of the worst ones, just because it's not only is it affecting the users of it, but it's affecting open source folks as a whole, right? And listen, I get it. There's a whole copyright and IP debate behind this, and I don't think I'm even remotely qualified to have that conversation, or know enough to have that conversation. But there's something to be said about like just being distasteful about it, right? So it's, I don't know, that's kind of at least my stance on it.
I think if there's a silver lining that came out of this is that once, you know, everything sort of did go pear-shaped for Hire, they started backtracking, they reached out and said, hey, look, you're right, we want to work with you. What can we do to make this right, essentially? They got some tech people on a call with Andre, Paulus from the founder of Home Assistant and Nabucasa jumped on that call and basically talked, you know, tech and said, guys, this is obviously a technical issue. What's causing, you know, why is it causing such financial impacts? I believe their response was something along the lines of, you know, we have to pay per API request. We only, you know, budgeted for, you know, people using the app, you know, very infrequently to check, you know, the status of their air conditioner or the status of their dishwasher or refrigerator. Of course, now Home Assistant is checking the status for those devices multiple times a minute. You know, I think the default was once every 10 seconds or something like that. So every 10 seconds, it's slamming the API, every request they're being paid, have to charge for. So a new version has been put out for this package at the moment that reduces the amount of the polling frequency to the higher servers. So that should dramatically, you know, see their costs decrease. And then moving forward, you know, it's going to be a wait and see, you know, what Haya does, you know, to either keep this open for the home business community and, you know, other open source communities to use their APIs.
Yeah.
Or are they going to just, you know, abandon it and say it's too expensive for us as a company to maintain? And
right. Which is entirely possible there too, right? And again, as much as I complained about it, they did come out to a, at least so far, to a good outcome, to a positive outcome coming from this. It's just it's where it left a lot of bad taste is again, I don't want to call it an attack because that is very dramatic, right? But to some extent it's affecting the entire open source community and what the open source community does and that whole community around hacking and not like unethical kind of hacking, but like, hey, let me see what I can do with this, right? And to some extent you're stifling innovation, right? Like it's you know, people come up with things like that and they're like, oh, you know, what if I do this and this and this, right? And like do those kind of cool things. So it's, I don't know, it's not ideal. And again, from a PR perspective, just bad, right? Like it's just they didn't think that part through properly, in my opinion.
What I thought was interesting is that it came from the European arm, which the European, like the EU, right? They're usually pretty on top of, you know, companies, you know, doing the right thing by consumers.
Totally.
And I think, you know, this would be sort of in their eyes, like a company saying, like removing features from a product that you're paying for, right? Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I was really surprised. Like this is something I would have expected to see from a US firm, not from a European firm.
Yeah. Meanwhile, their American arm is like, nope, not us. We're good.
Support IoT.
We're cool.
Yep.
Yeah. It's
the world was upside down for a minute.
But it's funny. It's almost like throwing their European counterparts under the bus, right? It's like, I don't know. I just find it funny when there's no solidarity in those kind of things. It's just, you know, it is what it is. But oh man, all right. Let's talk about 2024. A couple of new features. CarPlay, right?
That one's just a little more.
It's funny because even on Facebook and stuff like that, again, I think we saw I saw the notification a little earlier in one of the creators' channels saying, hey, you know, this is coming, whatever. And I was like, oh, this is cool, whatever. But I was like, I was excited, but I didn't know how excited people would be. And then all of a sudden you see on Facebook and stuff like that, where people plugged it in into their car in the morning when they're on their drive. Yeah. Again, first thing you do, you wake up, you're not looking at like the Home Assistant blog necessarily or whatever. You're, you know, brushing your teeth, getting your coffee, whatever, and leaving to go to work or whatever. And so there's a few people that did that, plugged in, and they're like, wait, what? I can do Home Assistant on my CarPlay? You know, it was really cool to see where like Facebook and like all of these different places where people are like, hold up, this is cool, right? And they're like, oh my God, right? And especially if you don't follow the development of the product very closely, it's like, oh my God, that's a really cool surprise, right? The CarPlay is here, so which was really cool. So that was nice.
Have you tried it out yet?
So very, very briefly. So My car doesn't have it. My wife's car does. So I took her car yesterday to just drive my parents to the airport, or whatever. And so I went, I plugged it in, I plugged in my phone, and I was like, okay, let's have a look. And lo and behold, I saw it. It's like, okay, tap to create actions on your do it from your mobile device. And again, I was already running late to the airport, so I was like, all right, I'm not gonna sit here and do this right now and have my parents miss their flight. But I haven't played with it, but I saw the icon there. I pressed it and it said, okay, you can do some stuff in the app. And I was like, all right, I'll come back to this. And that's where I've left it, right?
Yeah.
But again, this is cool where, especially if you see, again, we talked about Chamberlain, MyQ and stuff like that a few minutes ago in the Cloud Strikes Again segment. But if you have like a Rat GDO or whatever other alternative, or maybe you've built your own, a garage door opener, you don't need to pay the, again, I know Chamberlain's having they're starting to charge for integrations into like specific vehicles, right? Like Tesla, I think they charge you like $10 a month to be able to open your garage door. And it's like, what? That's so stupid, right? I don't know. I'm very against that. And I hope everybody that's listening right now is as well. I get the convenience of it, but at that point, spend the $40 for Rat GDO or similar kind of products. Yeah. I know there's a couple of commercial offerings out there now too. I can't remember them off the top of my head, but do that and then work with the CarPlay integration. So it's just like, hey, I need to open the garage door. Just boop, off you go, right?
It's just like nickel and diming kind of all their customers. Like, you know, just, oh, you know, now you want to do that in your car? Okay, it's $10 a month. Oh, you want to... Put that on your Echo Show. Okay, here you go. That's another $10 a month.
Yeah, and it's like, I don't get it.
It's even with Teslas, right? Like, okay, you buy the car. Oh, yeah. You want heated seats? Okay, pay $5,000 and we'll give you a software update that enables the hardware that you've already paid for in the car.
Like, yeah. Well, who is it? BMW did that, not Tesla. Yeah, it's like, and really? It's like,
I'm pretty sure Tesla had something similar where they hacked into
for theirs is it's features. Internet. Internet's a premium feature. Obviously, full self-driving is a premium feature, stuff like that, which, fine, those aren't necessities, right? Like, it's like, I'm sorry, but when you're in, like, in winter and stuff like that, and your car comes with heated seats, you've clearly paid for it already. Like, the capital has been charged, but it's like BMW just being like, oh, let me pick a random feature and be like, I'm going to charge for that.
That one,
it's like, oh, you know, you want your passenger side vents to work? Okay, that's another $3 a month, right? Like, it's to your point, Phil, it's just nickel and diming for the sake of it.
Yeah.
So that's where a lot of our, I'm becoming a lot more like, hey, let's pull out some of those recurring cost things, right? Like, again, like there's a time and a place for those things. And I don't think it is, for me at least, it's not in my home.
Yeah, and right. That's the beauty of self-hosting, right? And Home Assistant, like, you know, we've got video doorbells that have subscriptions, we've got all our smart speakers and stuff, like, get to reduce all those subscription fees. There you go. Anyway, back onto 2024.2. Home Assistant is now shipping with Python 3.12. You probably won't notice anything, maybe some speed improvements around the place. If you're using Home Assistant OS and Home Assistant Container, you don't need to do anything. Home Assistant has handled the upgrade for you. Otherwise, if you're rolling your own, I believe they will still be supporting 3.11 for a period of time, but 3.12 is now the official version of Python that Home Assistant is running on.
Yeah, and really it affects you if you're running it like old school with a virtual environment and those kind of things. That's where you have to really upgrade it. Otherwise, you're pretty much good. From what Frank was saying, 3.12 does bring a ton of performance improvements and stuff like that, and it's a precursor to, obviously, 3.13,
of course.
Which is apparently even more performant, I guess, so, which is kind of cool. Drag and drop support for automation. So this has actually been a big ask to from a lot of folks. I know even on the creators call that we had, there's a couple of people really excited about that. So dragging and dropping triggers, conditions, and actions is now enabled. So you had to go and reorder those in the automation editor settings and so on and so forth. Now you can just click and drag and move it up, down, whatever you need to do. And you can also drag elements within nested elements. So, you know, if it should be a child under an and condition block, just click it, drag it in there, and off you go, right? Which is really nice. So.
Nice. All right. There is now the ability to export your history data from the history dashboard. So if you're looking at, you know, how much energy you've consumed over the past month, over the past year for all your devices or a specific device, there's now a little export button there. You can hit that, download it as a CSV, and do whatever you want with it. You can chuck it into a different programming language, use it in Excel, create some charts, yeah, do what you need, or even just save the file and use it for historical purposes. Nice little...
Yeah, exactly.
Little nice to have.
Yeah, it's Paulus's favorite feature this release, by the way, so it's
oh, there you go. I've got a better one.
Yeah, this one's one of my favorite ones, the one coming up. So you're now able to update entities for ZHA devices. So when a Zigbee device is connected to Home Assistant via ZHA and there's a firmware update available, it will basically prompt you to say, hey, you know, there's a firmware update available. Would you like to update it? And these are primarily for the ones that have a Home Assistant certification behind it. Folks like Inovelli, Osram, Sonoff, Third Reality, those are the devices that are currently supported. I would expect to see a little more on there soon, or a few more on there soon. But just know that, again, it's super cool, but it is Zigbee, right? So you're taking a large file, a large firmware file, and uploading it to using a protocol that supports very small bits of very small bits of transferring information. So it will be very slow, to the effect of potentially a couple hours even, right? Like to update the firmware. So don't be panicked if you see it and you're like, hey, let me update. And then all of a sudden your thing's not working. Don't turn it off halfway or anything like that. Like, it just let it go and it'll update, right? So just plan accordingly for those kind of things.
The Home Assistant private voice assistant will now respond with better errors. So previously, if you had an error in the voice assistant, it would give you a generic response, right? So now, as of 2024.2, Assist will provide much better errors in case your intention is understood but something else is missing. For example, if you've got an unknown name, or if you've asked it to turn off all the lights in the garage, but there is no garage entity defined, Assist will now respond and say, sorry, I know you want me to turn off the lights in the garage, but I don't know what the garage is. Please create an area with a garage and then assign devices to that area. So, yeah, starting to get a little bit more user-friendly.
Yeah, what we're doing there. That's pretty cool. Custom responses for Assist. So with the introduction of like the whole sensor trigger bit, so 2024.2 now has a new action to send custom responses back to the conversation. So you can say, like, you know, if your sentence trigger, for example, is like, hey, what's the best podcast of all time? Then your automation will go in and say, hey, it'll respond back to the person saying, hey, you know what? This is obviously the Home Assistant podcast, right? So before you need to do any kind of complicated YAML or anything like that, before you would need to, you know, configure complex YAML and do that kind of thing, otherwise it'll just be done, right? So if you want something more than that, it's pretty neat to have that in there. So now that can also accept templates, so you can kind of get fancy and mix up your responses and do that kind of thing, right? So which is nice.
I could see, yeah, like that'd be really cool for, like, maybe you've got kids and you've got a smart speaker, or will eventually have, you know, like a box where you can talk to Assist. You can have kids, you know, say, you know, what's on the agenda for today, or, you know, tell me a joke, right? And now you can have a template that just uses the random function and picks out a random joke, or, you know, mashes up, you know, your daily agenda or the weather and all that, and puts it nicely with a nice template. That's very cool. All right. Authentication issues now shown as repairs in Home Assistant. So if you've got a integration that needs to be signed in again, maybe you've got a cloud provider that's, you know, you've changed your password and now Home Assistant can't access that integration, Home Assistant will now throw up a repair, which means you'll now get an icon against the cog in the area to say, you know, take a look, there's something over here that needs attention. And then you can go into the repairs dashboard and take action for that item.
Yeah. Before it was in the integrations pane and it'll be highlighted red, and that's still going to be there. But just one more place.
Didn't, unless you were looking at that dashboard, you wouldn't know.
Yeah. At some point I actually had a automation to go in and tell me, hey, like, by the way, this is, you need to be logged back into like your Amazon Echo or whatever. Right. Like, this one's nice too, is there's also automatic cleanups of unused or old refresh tokens. So, you know, if you're using the app and stuff like that, like the companion app and stuff, so those typically, leverage refresh tokens and or even in the browser, those leverage refresh tokens to keep you logged in. Any device that hasn't used Home Assistant in 90 days will be locked out. So again, if you have the companion app and it's regularly sending updates and stuff like that into Home Assistant, you don't need to worry. And these aren't like the long live tokens. These are just the refresh tokens. So usually if you go into Home Assistant and you go to that area and so you scroll, you've just got this long list of stuff in there. So you don't have to go in, clean that out anymore. Pretty much after it was last used, it'll, 90 days on the dot, pretty much, second for second, it'll get basically just deleted after that. So, I like it just because, again, if you have like an old device lying around and stuff like that, maybe you haven't used it and it goes missing and whatever it is, people don't necessarily have access to that after that 90 day period. So
for me, this is like an about time this is here, because I can't be the only one, but I'm constantly logging in either like on my local IP or from the Nebuchadnezzar URL, and I just have a whole bunch of tokens in that list, and to delete them there was no like multi-select, right? So you had to select, you have to click, you know, like 100 times to delete 100 of these long-lived tokens that are never going to be used again. This is my favorite feature for this month.
Exactly.
List that I hardly ever look at, and I know it's not going to be growing again. About time.
So if you're curious where that is, again, this process happens automatically, but if you want to look at some of the refresh tokens you have and stuff, even from a security perspective, maybe you're not updated onto this release. It's just in your profile. So if you go and log into Home Assistant, click on your name and scroll down a little bit there, you'll see it near the bottom. So the last one is long live tokens. Right above that is a refresh token. So that's the section we're talking about.
Nice. All right, stick around. We'll be back with new integrations after this.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. What are some things you want to keep the same about yourself or your life in 2024? Maybe you want to add a bunch more automations in your home. Maybe you want to do some other stuff. What are you doing well already this year? Around New Year's, we get obsessed with how to change ourselves instead of just expanding on what we're already doing right. Maybe you finally got that one room automated. Maybe you got it organized. And you want to tackle something else. Or maybe you're taking your supplements every morning and now you want to actually eat breakfast too. Therapy helps you find your strengths so you can ditch the extreme resolutions and make those changes really stick. Therapy is really helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It really empowers you to be the best version of yourself, and it isn't just for those who have experienced major trauma or anything like that. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Celebrate the progress you've already made. Visit betterhelp.com/assistant to get your 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp, help.com/assistant.
All right, new integrations for this release. And this one's actually not a new integration, but it's worth highlighting. I think pretty important here. Tuya, I think a lot of people use the Tuya integration. Tuya have done some great work with Home Assistant or Nebuchadnezzar, and you no longer require a Tuya developer account to link your Tuya devices with Home Assistant. Now, that in itself is huge because I don't know if you've ever tried to link to your device, Rohan, but there was there's people have created scripts, there's command line tools. So not only do you need a developer account to link up these devices, you've then got to find the internal IDs of those devices. You've got to link up those devices with your app. Then, you know, there's command line tools to scan your Wi-Fi, get the ID numbers. What does that ID over there mean? Okay, cool. Then you've got to plug that into YAML somewhere in Home Assistant, maybe somewhere in the UI now. Anyway, you can now use the 2-Year Smart or the Smart Life app. There'll be a QR code somewhere in the Home Assistant UI or somewhere, there's a QR somewhere. Yeah. You scan that and it should just link the device through the 2-Year Cloud to your Home Assistant installation. So fantastic work. And this is, you know, we had Cloud Strax again previously. This is like the opposite. This is great to see a company like Tuya, who also have many brands that they resell under around the world. You know, a lot of companies, you know,
thousands of brands leverage that they resell under.
Yeah, they leverage the Tuya brand. So this is cool to see Tuya coming out and working with Home Assistant and getting so many devices just easier to integrate with.
Yeah, which is fantastic, right? So, yeah, like Phil said, just go to the integration. I think it's when you add the integration, you'll get like a pop-up and say, hey, like, let's go into this. So you still need the app, right? So it's, but which is still way better than having to need all this other process, like you said, Phil, which is, and again, I don't have any Tuya products, but it sounds pretty painful. I didn't realize it was actually that bad because, again, I didn't have any, so I've never actually bothered looking into it, but it's,
I've got scars from like trying to download a command line tool to get these IDs, and then you put the IDs in, and then you're like, okay, now only half of the switches are working. What does this switch do?
AirTouch 5. You can now control your AirTouch 5 ducted air conditioning systems. That's kind of nice.
If you're in the market for a new sound system, Bang & Olufsen is now available. So you can control the Beolab, and the Beosound devices in Home Assistant.
Amazing. Yeah. It's kind of a weird name, Beo. It's like body odor. Mm. But.
Yeah.
but no, I do actually kind of like that integration. Bring. So if you use Bring to create shopping lists and stuff like that, you can create it now and share that with your family.
Elvia, you can now import your historic energy usage if you are a user of the Elvia grid.
Epion, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right. Maybe it's Epion, I don't know. But Epion, you can monitor their air quality sensors in Home Assistant now.
Now, Govee lights can now be controlled locally. Now, Ryan, do you have any Govee lights?
I do. I have a couple. I've got one, some behind me. So if you're watching this on YouTube, so I've got a little Govee light bar thing there, and I've got one on the side here in my office. So, yeah.
Will you be switching over using this locally then, I'm guessing? Assuming you've integrated with the system.
So this is for Govee lights that have the local API. So some of their ones don't have local API.
Interesting.
So those products won't be supported by this integration, I believe, from what I understand. I might be wrong there, but I'm pretty sure that's what it is. But for the ones that do, this will totally work for that. So in my case, these two have it. I do have another one that doesn't have Govee local API, unfortunately. So that's kind of cloud driven there. So, But there are a couple of cool custom components, one relying on MQTT and just one just relying on their API or some of that. I think it still tries to hit locally, but wherever it can. But
nice.
Home Assistant Analytics Insights. So that integration kind of allows you to monitor information about the public and open Home Assistant Analytics. If you're not familiar with that, if you ever selected, hey, yeah, I'm happy to share my analytics with Home Assistant, gives them an idea of where and how to prioritize features development and so on and so forth. So And even with deprecation, they kind of get almost a blast radius of, you know, how many people, if we deprecate this feature, who's going to get affected? And that kind of drives a lot of that stuff, right? Again, from a privacy perspective, they are very privacy forward. So, and they're pretty open about what kind of stuff that they collect. So if that interests you, check it out. And you can add it as an integration as well.
I wonder, like, I don't know what the use case for this is specifically, but I can imagine, like, maybe you've created a component in Home Assistant and you want to track, you know, how many installations are using it just for your own Alex, or maybe you want to reward yourself, you know, maybe you'll get some extra credits on to watch TV, you know, if your component gets, you know, an extra 500 users this month or something. I don't know. I'm sure that we could, or maybe you want to download the information to your Home Assistant dashboard and then, you know, export it as a CSV. I don't know what the use case having that data in there, but I'm guessing it would be cool to have it on a Lovelace dashboard.
No, it's still kind of cool. You can keep an eye out. Yeah. Even if nothing, you can also be like, hey, how many people? But that's a nice thing, right? Like, again, with this, with the analytics, again, I know we're going off on a tangent here, but with the analytics piece here, if you're one of the things you can look at too is how many people are using a specific component, which is, so let's say from a buying decision perspective, it's, you want to say, hey, I want to buy this device. I don't know if it's super popular or not, because you might say, okay, if there's four people using it, then maybe I'm not going to get, you know, support on the communities or something like that. If you know, because of such a small subset of users, right? Not to say that that's the case. The communities are pretty good, so there's typically people, somebody that'll reply or whatever. But in the event that that's the case, you know, that might drive your buying decisions there too, right? So I actually like the analytics. I've never used it for that purpose, but you know, as I'm talking about it, I'm kind of like, why have I not done that before?
Yeah, I'm thinking the same thing. Like, many, damn, that's a really good use for it.
I know. This is the thing, right? You come up with stuff on the fly and you're like, wait, that's actually a good idea. But
all right. A new weather platform is here in Home Assistant. If you are in Hong Kong, the Hong Kong Observatory can now be used to get weather information into Home Assistant. There you go.
There you go. That's kind of nice. I believe it's pronounced Hume. So if you have a smart sauna based on Hume, it's... you can now connect it, which is cool. I actually saw a YouTube video of somebody that made a sauna in their backyard.
Nice.
And used one of their things. That's why I know the brand. There you go.
La Mazzocco espresso machines are now available in Home Assistant. Now, Rohan, I know you've just had some trouble with your Revel espresso machine. This is probably perfect timing for you if you're in the, like, now you can get a smart one.
I unfortunately don't have an extra couple grand sitting around for that one.
Are they that expensive? Are they? I don't drink coffee, so I wouldn't just for that either.
I think they are a more premium brand. I haven't actually looked into it. I just know when we were chatting about it, it was, you know, it's like, hey, you know, if you can, it's one of those like things where it's like, okay, if you can afford one of these, then definitely have it in Home Assistant. But these are like, I think they're like handmade or something like that. Like
interesting.
Yeah, they're, unfortunately my, Breville Barista Express, my like, and again, it's funny because people are like, well, that's a, like, I mean, that is a premium kind of espresso machine, right? But it's you realize when one of my colleagues was making fun of me, right? Because I was like, yeah, you know, he's like, oh, I haven't seen that one, whatever. And I was like, yeah, it's pretty good, you know, it's like, it's one of the automated. He's like, how much did you pay for it? And at the time I had paid, like, this is when it first came out and it was before it became like very popular and whatever. So it's like, I think I paid like $450 or something. It was on sale.
Yep.
But it was before I even moved into this house. I was like, hey, you know, I want to buy something nice for the house for myself kind of thing. And I bought that and I was like, whoa, okay, this is a great deal, whatever. And now it's, I think, close to $800 for the same thing.
Yeah. They haven't changed.
And oh yeah, exactly. Right. And, so it's like, okay, this, you know, whatever, it's nice, whatever. And, yeah, so he was making fun of me because he's like, okay, dude, you need to get a real espresso machine. And I was like, what do you mean? And he's like, no, this one's way too cheap to actually be a real espresso machine. I'm like, oh, man. So, but I just have the Lumber Zoco ones pulled up right now, and it's saying from $8,000 Canadian, from $7,500 Canadian. So it's unfortunately, I don't think these ones are in the cards for me. Oh, the grinder is $3,000, $3,200. So
maybe someone can buy you that for your birthday, and that's your entry point, right? And then you just, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe put up an alert for Facebook Marketplace. You know, you never know your luck.
Hey, you know what? That's actually not a bad idea. It's we've recently had a lot of good luck in Marketplace, so that's it's not terrible. But all right, Leo One. So if you have a health device made by Leo One under the Xiaogui or Beigel brands. And I apologize if I butchered any one of those three names again. Today's the name of day of hard names for me. I don't
it
know
is, it isn't it? Yeah.
Usually, at least it's like you'll get one, I'll get one.
This
time, like, it's all me. It's
My Uplink. You can now monitor My Uplink supported devices in Home Assistant.
Rabbit Air, locally control and monitor your Rabbit Air peer purifiers. So if you've got one of those things, that's actually kind of nice. I like air purifiers in here because you can always control them and say, hey, you know what? I need this on right now, whatever. I'm not home, whatever. It's kind
of nice. And usually they come with sensors to tell you what the air quality is, right? Which is good also to have in the charts of Home Assistant.
Yeah. Yeah. I think my air purifier is starting to go too. It's like there's an air quality sensor in there. So it's like, and that's how it kind of spins up and down, whatever. And I got gifted this one. And but it's just, I don't know, it's really good. It's a blue air one, but I cleaned it out, whatever, changed the filters, did all that, and then maybe I hit something, I don't know what I did, but like it spins up nice, but then 2 hours later it's still going, and I was like, man, what did we cook or whatever, right? And like it's like it wasn't smoky, it wasn't anything, like it was like baked something, and it's like, why is this going on full tilt? And then so I'll have to manually like turn it off and put it back on the auto sense mode, and it goes back down, right? And it's like, and then next time it'll go up again, and I'm like, what's going on here? So yeah, I don't know, but maybe I should look into Rabbit Air. See, this is the problem. So this is how I spend my money. It's like, oh,
that's
this thing is here in this release, let me look at that, right?
All right, while you do that, Rainforest Raven is now available. You can use that to track your energy usage in Home Assistant. So I've got a Rainforest Eagle. I assume the Raven is pretty similar. Little device that can then attach to your smart meter and get your energy usage.
Very cool. Romy, if you have a Romy vacuum cleaner, bring it in there.
That's nice. TD Smart Locks, now available in Home Assistant. So that's TEDEE.
Again, just another name, Teslametry. I don't know. It's the Tesla Fleet API, product where they can, it's not by Tesla, but it's a third party. It's a Teslametry, I think is how it's pronounced, but, you can pull in live telemetry data from the vehicle, using the Tesla Fleet API. I think I've looked into this one before. I think there is a cost.
Because I thought there was another custom component that may have come out recently that maybe did the same thing, or maybe this is the promotion of it from a custom component to the real thing. But it wouldn't surprise me that there's a cost. I don't see.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Here we go. Accessed. This service is free during its development or until Tesla introduces paid membership tiers for third parties. Okay. Interesting. Okay. So I guess this one's not. There's no charge to it, at least right now. Kind of cool. Okay.
Techno VE or Techno V, control your Techno VE smart charging station using a local API. Very nice. Cool.
Track Car. I feel like Phil and I were talking about this before we started recording. I'm like, I feel like we've talked about Track Car a few times, and it's like every single time, like, hey, there's another integration for it. But it sounds like this is the Track Car server, so you can integrate your GPS devices by pulling data from a tracker server. So I guess if you host your own service, maybe? I don't know. I don't use it. I'll ask them.
Yeah.
Is it? Okay, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
breaking changes time. So we mentioned before about authentication and refresh tokens. So the refresh tokens will be automatically deleted when unused. So a refresh token is considered unused if it has not been used for a login for 90 days. So that means that if you've logged into a session that hasn't been used for 90 days, so maybe you've got a tablet that you use occasionally and you don't use the Home Assistant app all the time on it, you will be logged out. So you will then need to log in again and go through the whole process again. If you need a permanent token, and you know, edge cases on that should be, you know, for whatever reason, if you need a permanent token, take a look at using long-lived access tokens, which is in the same area we'll talk about in the profile settings before. They will never expire.
Yeah. You should really rename it to backward incompatible changes, which is now what breaking changes are called. But
you're right, yeah.
I still love that, Dave. It's so specific, right? Cisco WebEx is another one that's where the integration's been disabled. So that's WebEx Teams specifically, the component for it. Mm-hmm. The upstream libraries used by Home Assistant right now are not compatible with Python 3.12. So that one might come back, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, assuming they can get a new Python version supported. I guess that's, just means you're stuck on 2024.1 until that package gets upgraded. I guess it's one of the problems of having so many third-party dependencies, right, or upstream dependencies.
Totally, like Home Assistant. I mean, Home Assistant is pretty much the king of that.
Yes, exactly. All of these dependencies,
so.
All right, for vacuum integrations, there's a whole bunch. Roborock, I think, there's going to be a whole bunch. The services vacuum.turnon and vacuum.turnoff were deprecated in 2023.11. Support for those deprecated services has now been completely removed. So if you are still using them, please adjust your automations and scripts and use vacuum.start and vacuum.stop instead.
Proximity, the proximity entity is deprecated now and will be removed in 2024.8. So you still have a little bit of time there. It is superseded by sensor entities. So the proximity entity itself is going away, but the functionality is not, right? So it's just being replaced by sensors. So for each tracked person or device, one sensor for the distance and the direction of travels to and from the monitored zone is created, right? So, and then for each proximity configuration, one sensor shows the nearest device or person to that monitored zone. That gets created too. So this way you can actually use the min-max integration to determine the closest distance and the furthest distance. So you can say, okay, how far, you know, is my, are my zones and people and so on and so forth. So, whereas the proximity entity itself, you weren't able to do that before.
So for this one, so proximity has also been moved into the UI as of this release. So if you've got proximity entities in your YAML, they've been moved over to the UI. And they've also been deprecated in the one release. I'm running the beta on this, so I'm hoping that there's going to be some fixes. I do use the proximity sensor a fair bit for my work automations going to work, and also, you know, when we're coming home, turning on the aircon as we approach home. I think I'm still a bit confused about this, and I think there might be some things coming in the beta that need to be addressed for this. But I'm not sure. It sounds like I'm now going to have to create new min-max sensors to do what the proximity sensors already did. I'm not sure, you know, what entities, if there's going to be new entities that I now have to monitor. So this isn't my favorite change out of this one. I think this one's going to be a bit of a confusing release for some people. And I know proximity is, like one of the core features, right? Like, you know, that Nest feature of, you know, as we're driving home, turn on the heating or turn on the cooling, right? I think, I'm still waiting to see how this is handled for the official release. I'm a bit nervous about this breaking change.
Yeah. I mean, incidentally, speaking of presence too, I don't know if you saw this, Phil, but Lewis from Everything Smart Home released he makes the Everything Presence 1. Yep. He actually released Everything Presence Lite. So it's a little cheaper there too, cost-wise. And it actually looks pretty neat. He's got a video out on it. Check it out. But yeah, it is. I don't know. I don't have any proximity sensors today, and I've been looking to be like, oh, you know, should I build my own, or do I just get something off the shelf? And I don't love the like, even from the FP2, which I think you have, or do you have the FP1? I forget.
I've got the FP1. Yep.
You've got the one from Aquara, and like, it's, I don't know, it looks really nice, but at the same time, it's like, you know, you still have to have the app to get some of that functionality and things like that. Like, to say, okay, you know, I've got X people in a room. This is where they are. Mm. They're in zone 2, whatever that is, right? Other than that, it's just like, people are here or people are not here. But this one looks pretty neat. So I'm going to try and check that one out too. So yeah. But so if you're in the market, have a look at that one too. So it's, I don't know. He's got the Presence 1, which is his original product there. And then he's got the Everything Presence Lite. I've played with it or anything. It just looks very, it looks pretty cool. So I would, I think I'm going to try that at some point. I don't know where, what I'm going to use it for, but.
Well, I'm in the market for a new millimeter wave sensor because, you know, because they're so expensive, right? So I've been slowly, you know, acquiring, you know, sensors to, now I've got, you know, a couple of rooms that needs, you know, upgrades to their sensors. I'm like, oh, I don't want to, do I get a FP2? But then that's on HomeKit. Mm-hmm. And they're really expensive. Like, I think the FP1 was like, I got it from China for like $70 or something, Australian.
Yeah.
And these ones are like 200 Australian in Australia, or 100 from China. And I'm like, oh, it's just a lot of money to have automations for one room, and then it's HomeKit, it's a Wi-Fi device. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and what's nice about this too, and it's like, it's got multi-target tracking, support for zones, light level sensing, Bluetooth proxy. Yeah. And what's cool is you can, if you don't want to use that millimeter wave sensor, you can always swap it out. So it comes with one of them built in, and you can, I think it's included with the LD2450, but you can always change that one out. So it's got a range of like 5 to 6 meters, so small to medium space according to the site there. But let's say you do have a larger space, whatever, you can upgrade that or maybe even go with a smaller one. I'm not sure. Again, I haven't looked that much into millimeter wave sensors, so I don't know a ton about what each sensor brings to it. But, you know, I don't know. I think for $50, it's a pretty good price point. It's 50 Canadian right now. It is sold out, unfortunately. But yeah, I don't know. I think kind of pretty neat. And it's got a detachable. It comes with a USB-C cable in white, right? So it's not
nice. Yeah.
Depending on, again, if you have an outlet right next to it, you don't need to coil, you know, all of your cables, whatever. And then, or on the other hand, if it's far away, you can get a really long USB-C cable and plug it in, kind of thing, right? So
that's like one of the things I hate about the FP1. Like, it came with a fixed USB-A cord. That was never the right length for any place you wanted to put the thing. So,
yeah. But I don't know. Yeah, again, I do follow Lewis and stuff like that. He's a great creator, and I think, I'd love to see stuff like this, right? Which is built by the community, and
yeah,
I think so.
100%. All right, RESTful commands. So a call to a RESTful command service will no longer silently fail and will now raise an exception, for examples, when there's a timeout or if there was, like, you know, trying to do a JSON response and it couldn't decode the JSON response. What this means is, if you've got a RESTful command as part of your script or automation, if it has one of those errors, the rest of the script or automation will not be executed. Previously, it would be. So now you can actually consider using the continue on error for scripts and automations, so that if there is an error and, you know, this is allowed to fail occasionally, the script or automation will continue running. So, yeah, you'll need to add that flag in there if you're experiencing that.
TP-Link smart switches. So to prevent overloading the power strip, the energy data is now pulled every 60 seconds. So if you need to pull it faster, you can use an automation that calls the home assistant .update_entity service and just pull it that way. So should be pretty straightforward. but every 60 seconds is still pretty decent.
I wonder if there's like a security risk, like a physical security risk there. Like if you could like slam one of these switches enough times to overheat it enough to cause a fire. I wonder if that's a possibility. Like that seems like a bit of a concern.
I would hope a smart switch can handle that load of all things, but I guess it depends on what you plug into it, maybe. I don't know. But like I don't know overloading how, right? So is it just gonna cause it to crash or is it gonna cause a fire? One is acceptable, one is not.
Exactly. Like I'm reading overloading and electricity as, oh, that's really bad. Like that's overheating, right? But maybe you're right. Maybe it's just causing the processor to crash and it loses its connection.
Yeah. It might be overwhelming rather than overloading, right?
Yeah.
But
all right. And as we mentioned before, Tuya, they provided that easier login method. You don't need to have a developer account or anything. You just scan that QR code. However, after you update to 2024.2, Home Assistant will ask you to re-authenticate your Tuya Smart or Smart Life account using the new method. So once you upgrade, there will be a repair or something that you need to follow and relink all those devices. I'm hoping you just relink your app and all the devices under your account will then just be relinked. Don't have to do it per device. So that's it. And that, I think, is 2024.2. Nice. We'll leave links to all the fun stuff we've talked about today. I think there's been some YouTube videos to watch, some links to products. They'll all be in the show notes as well on haspodcast.io.
Yeah. Now we'll actually need to find those links. So
That's it.
Just talk all about right. it. I did this thing a few months ago. I don't know.
That's it. All right.
Perfect.
See you in the next one.
Cheers.
If you want to share your Home Assistant journey or come on as a guest, reach out to us at feedback@hasspodcast.io. That's hasspodcast.io.
The Home Assistant Podcast is hosted by Phil Hawthorne and myself, Rohan Karamandi. For links to topics we discussed today, check out our show notes on haspodcast.io.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.